We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. They're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Wednesday evening Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante. I'm here tonight with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots, and we have a lot going on here tonight for this version of Culture Vigilante. Busy week. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants, so I'm trying to get oriented here, trying to take care of graduating seniors and college freshmen and all of that kind of thing in my neck of the woods. Trying to keep up with the daily scandal count. Cindy, what's the daily scandal count? Where are we up to now? Are you keeping track?
Oh, I think we're up to a dozen or maybe a baker's dozen. I'm pretty sure that's how we are. I think that sounds about right.
My head is spinning. I mean, I can't, you know, every single day it is something else. And I cannot get over, and still today we ought to start keeping account. It is day whatever. No one is talking impeachment. Nobody's talking about bringing the house down. Nothing. Every single day.
No.
I don't understand. I do not understand. And this NSA kid, whatever his name is, I can't remember his name, the kid hiding out in Hong Kong, you know, he's on the lam. We have the latest scandal, so we'll keep watching that one, see how that one goes. And, you know, okay, and something occurred to me today is I was flashing through all of these scandals. Whatever happened to the guy, the Boston bombing guy, the first suspect that they had? Did we ever hear about what happened to that guy?
Oh,
that news just faded away.
The Saudi that so much was made out of that. And
yeah, they arrested him, then they let him go.
I know that the Blaze and Glenn Beck were making, you know, had a lot of information about him, and then it just completely fell off the radar.
Yeah, where is that guy?
Who knows?
Did he get deported back to...
Don't know.
Arabia?
Nope.
Saudi Arabia? No, we don't know where he went. It just, everybody got quiet. Even the people, even Glenn Beck isn't even talking about it anymore. Why?
Yeah, and then it's also interesting. That's a good question. And it's also interesting because I had something come across through my email over the weekend, and I was out of town, so I'm scrambling trying to find it. But they were talking about how the families, the 9/11 families, are very upset and demanding answers from the FBI and from, I don't know if there's another government agency, but they were investigating Saudis in Florida, apparently, who it appears were the financiers of the 9/11 attacks.
The most recent 9/11 attack?
Or the 9/11 attacks, the original 9/11 attacks.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
We never heard about that, did we?
No.
And they're demanding that the FBI release the information that they have, and that they, you know, they're very upset because apparently, from what I saw in the story, there's a lot to this, and so I don't know, but it's concerning that our government is so far in bed with them that they're ignoring. Their part in things. And then today they were accidentally live mic'd saying that
I heard that.
They have to go to war with America.
We're happy to go to war with Israel
and the great state in the U.S. Yeah.
Oops, we're being taped. It's going out live as we speak. But we're happy to kill our neighbors, the Americans. Lovely.
Yeah.
Oops.
So, I don't know. That's a very important question that's gone unanswered.
Okay.
Where are they?
Yeah, I mean, we are being so quickly led down the golden trail. It's just not even funny. They're leading us to the slaughter. We're right over the cliff.
Oh, yeah. And we're about to have amnesty shoved down our throats over the next week or so, and the Republicans are helping to push it.
Yeah, and the farm bill.
Okay,
so another reason to go to the Replace Roy Facebook page. I mean, you knew Claire was going to go for it, but, you know, we got Roy. And you know, Roy's he's in bed with them all, too. So go to Replace Roy. Go to the Facebook page, Replace Roy. Join the effort there, because we got to start getting somebody to run against him primary if we're even here and when he's ready to go. Anyway, go to Facebook page, Replace Roy. And who else voted for that lovely farm bill thing was Rand Paul. What's up with that?
I don't know.
He also voted with Roy
to bring the amnesty. Well, of course, you know, it's really called immigration reform. There's nothing reforming in immigration and everything about amnesty in that. We're going to put amnesty first, and then we'll worry about our borders.
Sure.
Where have we heard that before? And, so Rand Paul voted for it. I have heard him interviewed about that before he made that vote and saying that he probably would make that vote because he and others want to be able to add amendments to the bill to make it a better bill.
Oh, fine. Can't you just present a bill, a decent bill out there without piddling with it?
Can we just say no? Can we just say this is a really bad bill, this doesn't get the job done, and we're not going to vote for it? How hard is that?
You know, I mean, he is so working hard positioning himself for a run in 16, and I'm thinking I'm not really liking him already. He just does some things that are strange.
Yeah, I'm not too and quite honestly, Lisa, if they succeed in pushing this through, this immigration reform through on a very serious note, it will fundamentally change the United States for probably forever.
Yeah, there may not be an election.
There will be nothing. We won't be able to win elections. Conservatives won't win elections. A Republican won't win a run for presidency for I don't know how far into the future you can look, but for that far. And a good rhino might be able to win, but it's a move to solidify and keep themselves in power in perpetuity. That's just the bottom line. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. So, folks, one thing, I heard Michelle Bachmann in an interview earlier this evening on another radio program, Mark Levin, and she is begging people to call their senators and their congressmen, women, about this legislation, about this immigration reform, because she said, you know, they're not hearing from anybody, and they don't think that the people are stirred up about this.
You're kidding.
And she said, you've got to call. You need to, and they're trying to put together a Tea Party rally next week in Washington when this starts being debated in the House, and to try to get as many people there as they can to show that there is a groundswell of opposition to it. So,
well, it has to be Tea Party, folks, because the lower information voters don't even know what's going on. They don't have a clue about immigration reform.
No. And they're really taking this to be that the Republicans are big bad meanies because they're keeping these poor kids that were drugged here by their illegal parents that have gone to school here and so forth and so on. And they need
they're using them as human shields.
Yeah.
They're using those kids as human shields.
So they can push through this fire.
Well, before we go any further, I want to say happy birthday to our friend Carolyn Miller. Carolyn is the one who keeps me in the loop these very past, almost always anyway, but especially these past couple of months while I've been so busy taking care of kids. She's got a big birthday tonight, and she's out eating ribs someplace, I think, tonight in the St. Louis area. So happy birthday to Caroline. We're so happy that she's well, and wish her many more happy birthdays, and hopefully we'll have her on with us next week again. She can keep us updated on the latest current events.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Caroline.
And, she sent me an article today. Okay, I live in the St. Louis area, and I'm sure this is going on all over the country. I'm not sure how this works in the outlying areas in Missouri and beyond, but and in other states. But here in the St. Louis area, we've been battling this red light camera issue for quite some time. And we had a a Missouri Supreme Court decision came down today, which overturned a lower court decision which banned or which deemed the red light cameras unconstitutional. Our Supreme Court of Missouri said that red light cameras are constitutional. Thank you, liberal judges on the Supreme Court in Missouri. So now, yeah, I mean, this just never ends. I don't know where we're
going. We just got rid of those things. We just got rid of those things in Washington.
I don't know. You know, so I'm sure, you know, they'll be taking DNA as you go through the red lights next time. So they'll upgrade those babies and they'll have all the information on you.
There
so
you go.
That was lovely. So now we can look forward to that. I hope somebody appeals this. I think I read a St. Louis Post-Dispatch article today that said that they're gonna appeal it to the higher court, to the full panel of judges. I think that's what they do. Three judges on the Missouri Supreme Court heard the case, and now they're going to appeal it to the full panel. So hopefully we'll get a better ruling, and then if not, I hope they take this all the way to the very end. But, you know,
well, I do too.
Supreme Court, any court, any the judicial, I have always said, you know, while we are watching our executive and our legislative branch burn this country to the ground, the judiciary is throwing gasoline on the fire. I mean, and nobody is watching them at all. I mean, they're totally off the rails. Putting anything in the hands of the judiciary is a huge mistake as far as I'm concerned. It's just a mess.
It is a mess, and you're right. They're pouring gasoline on it.
And guess what I heard this, Cindy?
Yeah.
Someone that I know named Cindy McGee was a topic of national conversation this week. Obviously, you're stirring up trouble. You got quoted in the Blaze and WorldNet Daily. Our very good friend Gina Loudon wrote an article because she found out that our troops overseas are being told that they are not allowed to do internet searches on the
Nippernet. It's the military network overseas that our servicemen use because they don't have access to the internet any other way, most of them, and that's what they use. And they've been told that they cannot use that to search, download, forward email, anything, any stories on the NSA scandal. They're not allowed to access in any way using the Nippernet, which kind of shuts that completely down for them and keeps them out of the loop, which is really strange because our military, when they're overseas like that, one of their requirements is that they're supposed to stay on top of current events and be up to date on everything that's going on around the world and back here in the United States.
Well,
and
I think the criteria was that it was causing a classified document issue for them to pull up news stories.
Yeah.
So
how can
reading a news story cause a classified issue like that? I mean, it's a news story. It's all over the world. How can that be a classified issue?
Well, that's the real million-dollar question. And the thing is that it is an unsecured network, and our military, they understand that they can't download classified documents on that particular network. They're not supposed to do that. They don't do that. And so the thing that the military is throwing out there is that there were classified documents associated with the story, and therefore, because of that, if they access stories about the NSA scandal, then they're going to trigger a classified message incident, which I think they're blowing smoke up everybody's butt and really going overboard with this. And now, here's an example. When the WikiLeaks happened, the military were the same thing happened when WikiLeaks stuff broke.
Mm-hmm.
But they were simply told not to, as far as we know and can find out, that they were not allowed to download any of the WikiLeaks documents. However, they were not prohibited from accessing the stories about WikiLeaks. So what's the difference this time around, and why are I'm just going to say it out loud, why are our military stationed overseas, at least the Air Force, being denied access to stories about this NSA scandal, which is, I think, one of the most egregious
overreaches. Let me ask you this.
Absolutely. Power into the American people's lives.
Do those guys have Facebook and Twitter while they're over there? Do they have personal? Can they access their own personal accounts on the Nippernet?
I don't know about Facebook. I think that there's some limitations because of the risk of viruses.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that we have a son currently stationed overseas, and he does Facebook. I don't know if he's doing it on Nippernet or if he's able to do it through his phone, but I'm not really sure. I don't know the answer to that question.
So would it, is it just accessing the Nippernet? I mean, can he do what he wants on his phone?
As far as I know, unless he's tying in through the Nippernet, then that would be
bad.
Which would mean that he does have access to Facebook then, because I know he was posting today. So,
well, there you go. Okay, so if they can, I mean, you know that the stories are on Facebook. People are posting stories all the time on Facebook. So. Doesn't smell right to me. And what really bothered me about the whole thing is our friend Gina Loudon is now also writing for WorldNet Daily, and she wrote about this article, or she wrote about this situation. And then Glenn Beck gets a hold of it and slams it that it's all misinformation. And, you know, it doesn't smell right. You know,
and
Glenn Beck.
It's just the military trying to protect their unsecure server from the classified documents being put on it, which cost man hours and money and blah, 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 blah. And
I think it's a little more, Glenn. Don't you?
Yeah, and that's just not. Yeah, it's just not. I think that they went to a couple of sources, and they. I don't think they vetted it out very well. That's just my opinion, based on what I know about this. And you know, I've looked at the NOTAM and the notice to the airmen in the Air Force concerning this, and I think that they're.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the military is using this to prevent our servicemen, for whatever reason, from having access to these stories, and I think that that's really sad. You know, and it's like I had asked my son about this, and, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's pretty bad that we're not allowed to access the stories about something this important, about freedoms that we're over here fighting for other people for, And we're not supposed to access the stories and be up to date about what's happening when the very freedoms we're fighting for are being destroyed at home through what this NSA is revealing our government is doing here in America.
Yep.
I mean, this is a police state. This is intimidation of the worst kind, and it is the type of intimidation you see only when a country is being taken over.
Yeah.
By and. Nefarious persons.
Yeah.
Persons.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. So,
yep.
You know, and our military should be able to be aware of what's happening here at home. And, of course, they
well,
are.
Well, first it's going to be the military, then it's going to be us. We'll shut the Internet down.
Sure. Right.
So.
I ended up being quoted in the article because I have a son in the military and I knew about the NOTAM. So.
Very good. Cindy McGee, yeah. Raising hell as usual.
You betcha. And I'll tell you what, when it comes to our military, I'll err on the side of caution as to what's happening to them as opposed to throwing them under the bus, possibly, and not seriously looking at. And you know, people should be questioning, maybe they aren't trying to censor the military, but what other thing could there possibly be that our government would want by sending out this notice to the airmen telling them you can't access these stories because they contain classified documents. Let's look at what they're doing. They're trying to do to the man who leaked the information. They're trying to turn him into a world-class traitor, and he needs to be hung from the highest beam and in the public square. And, you know,
yeah, we should actually talk about that.
Maybe this whole thing with the military is just to add some validity to this whole thing, that this was so bad and these classified documents were so horrific and this is such a terrible act of treason that, you know, we've got to hang this guy. We've got to get him back here and we've got to kill him.
Right. They need a scapegoat. And I, you know, yeah. that was my first thought too. They're going to find that guy and they're going to do away with him before anything ever happens.
I'm not saying this guy is pure as the driven snow. There may be things we find out about him that we're all going to be, you know, I don't know. This story is still developing and that's an important thing to keep in mind. However, the NSA and none of the government agencies have really been able to effectively deny that what he said was the truth. So there you have it. There's the bottom line.
Yeah. All right, let's move on because we've got a full lineup for us going for us tonight. So, you know, as most of us are, we're kind of sick of the status quo in Washington, D.C., and we're kind of looking ahead to the 2016 elections, and we have a presidential candidate on with us tonight. Robbie Wells, running as an independent, is going to be on with us tonight, give us the full rundown on his campaign, and he's actually run for president before in 2012, and he's obviously got some experience in this campaign thing, so we'll talk to him in a little bit. Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity has been grading the legislature, and they have some new information up on their website, and we'll talk to him later on in the show. And last week we had Ike Skelton on. There's a huge land grab going on in Missouri and Arkansas. It's called the White River Watershed National Blueway. And there's a movement here to get the Patriot Movement and the citizens of Missouri and Arkansas involved in stopping that. And we have a story from a man named Jim Fisher who lives in that area, and he has a long history. His family has a very long history, more than 100 years of his land and property rights being abused by the federal government. He's going to be on a little bit later to talk about what's happened to him regarding land grabs from the United States government. And last but not least, we have a whole lot of time slated for Tom Martz from the Locke and Smith Foundation. We've been trying to do a legislative wrap-up for many weeks. Locke and Smith is now very heavily engaged in trying to do their legislative wrap-up and to determine who the most constitutional legislator is. So it's been kind of hard to get Tom away from that, but he's going to join us tonight. We're going to talk some Yankee Doodle legislation, and there is some, and it's going to surprise you. You're not going to like it, but we'll explain it to you when he comes on. So for now, folks, let's take a quick break, and we will come right back with Robbie Wells. Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we have with us this evening Mr. Robbie Wells. He is a presidential candidate for the 2016 presidential election. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Lisa, it is great to be here with you tonight and for everyone across the state of Missouri that's listening and even around the world. I'd like to say thank you so much for taking this time.
Well, so, you know, the obvious question here is, Mr. Wells, you are running for president in the 2016 election. You ran in the 2012 election as under the Constitution Party's flag, and you are not running under the Constitution Party's flag this time. You're running as an independent. Is that correct?
That is correct, and let me tell you this. We ran in 2012, Lisa, just to get my name out there. Being very realistic about it. And I believe that it worked like a charm because on November the 3rd, 2012, 3 days before the general election, I went ahead and announced that I would be running in 2016. I am an independent, although I have been courted pretty heavily by several parties out there now, including the Republican Party.
No kidding.
That's correct. And, you know, I've been going around the country. We've got people in 45 states working on this campaign now, and we've got over 35 state coordinators, which includes Alaska, believe it or not, and we've got people in Hawaii working on this this campaign. So we're serious about it, and we're serious about having a true restoration for this republic. We talk about change every 4 years. I believe that in 2008, when we elected the current president that we have now, and then, of course, with his reelection, we're getting change. We're getting plenty of change. It's not the change that, we need as a country.
Absolutely. So, okay, so constitutional conservative. Oops, I've got your website up and running here. Let's turn off the sound. Constitutional conservative. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your platform. Now, you have an education background. You have a master's degree in education. And you.
That's correct.
Okay, so we like to talk education here because Cindy and I are really, you know, we're homeschool moms, and we are very, very entrenched in what education really is for kids. So, you know, the federal government is very deeply involved in education. How do you feel about that?
Well, if you look at it, we've had the Federal Department of Education since 1977. If you go before 1977, we ranked pretty much at the top in the world in education. Now we rank about 32nd, 33rd. Just depends on which poll you're looking at. I venture to say that the Federal Department of Education, which is unconstitutional, by the way, is a lot of the problem. As president, I will be pushing to shut down the Federal Department of Education and give it back to the states. Let's just follow the 10th Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about all of those government agencies like the EPA and so, you know, all of those ridiculous, the czar factory that they've got going in Washington, D.C.?
Well, again, we've got all these unconstitutional departments that we're paying for that are unconstitutional, and we've got to cut that out. It's making us feel broke anyway. So if we can cut these departments out, then we can get the balanced budget pretty quickly. And then we're back on track with what, you know, our founding fathers set for us.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about some of the burning issues that we've got going today. We've got issues with immigration, and we've got issues with the economy, and those are probably two of the hottest issues now. Let's start with immigration.
Okay, yeah, we've got a major problem with immigration. We've got about 17 million illegal immigrants in this country right now, and probably just about the same number of unemployed Americans. We've got a major problem here. We do need immigration reform. What I would like to see happen is to take away all of the benefits that the illegal immigrants get by coming to America. That's one of the reasons that you've got such a big number. At the same time, the reason you've got a large number is because we have so many regulations on the immigrants that come here. We make it so difficult for someone to actually gain their citizenship. So I believe that we need to look at it on both sides. Let's look at it where we can help people become citizens here, probably a little bit easier than what they are right now. But at the same time, we need to take away all these benefits of the illegals.
Okay, so I couldn't agree with you more on that, but here's the issue with that, and here's why it doesn't get anywhere, is because basically the benefits are buying votes. So how do you deal with something like that? I mean, we are so far off kilter, and the 47% that Romney ran on, you know, when he talked about the 47% during his campaign and was burned at the stake for, I mean, it's a reality. You know, we have a huge, huge entitlement culture here. How do you deal with the entitlement culture if you take away their benefits? Hello? Hello, hello? Robbie, are you there? Oh, I think we lost
him. Can you hear me?
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hit the mute button by accident.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. Here's what
okay.
I will say to you. Here's what I will say. We did not get in this situation overnight, and it's going to take some time to fix it. As far as the entitlements are concerned, you can't just cut it off and expect to be okay. It's not going to happen that way. We've got to gradually get out of that. How? We've got to bring the manufacturing jobs back. We've got to get people back to work in this country first, and then we can start working on easing out of all these entitlements. It's about like a person that's got a huge tumor on their back, and they go to the doctor and say, can you get rid of this tumor? And the doctor says, sure. Well, if the doctor goes up and just whacks it off, that person's probably going to bleed to death. Well, it's the same way. We'll probably bleed to death in the country if we just cut everything off. So we've got to slowly go in and surgically repair our government and repair this system, which is what my plan does.
Okay, let's jump to a little bit about the economy the Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare. It all kind of weaves together. You know, feel free to go into detail about that. Most of the folks here and bring the Fed into it if that helps you.
Okay. Well, as far as Obamacare is concerned, I will be pushing to repeal Obamacare. It is a job killer. Plus, if you go back and you think about what President Obama said, President Obama did a sit-down interview with George Stephanopoulos where he adamantly denied that Obamacare was attacked. Yes, last summer, right about this time, it was the Supreme Court that upheld Obamacare because they said it was attacked. So that means that one of two things was happening with President Obama when he met with George Stephanopoulos. Number one, he was deceiving the American people, or number two, President Obama did not realize that it was attacked. Either way, that's not good enough to be the president of the United States. But I do want to congratulate President Obama on getting the largest tax increase passed in the history of the world during one of our worst recessions.
Okay, so here's the deal. Of course, the people want – nobody likes Obamacare. I think the polls very clearly reflect nobody likes Obamacare on either side. You know, no matter what side you fall on, it's not a good thing, and we know it's a problem. And people are going to find out just how much of a problem it is later this year. But the thing is Congress likes it. Regardless of what they say, even the Republicans, they're not doing a damn thing to fight it. They've had so many opportunities to defund it or to stall it, and they're not doing it. So how do you deal with a Congress, Republican or Democrat, that really is not working for the folks? They are secretly really interested in putting everybody under control of the government. How do you deal with that?
Well,
you
gotta
have a plan.
I completely agree, which is why I'm running 4 years out. These are drastic times, Lisa, and they require drastic measures, which is
right.
Why I am doing what I am doing and educating the people across this country. How am I educating them? We're traveling all across this country. We're meeting with state legislators. We're meeting with people, just average Americans, just like myself. You see, I'm the exact opposite of a Mitt Romney. I'm a middle-class American, just like everybody else. Well, 99.6% of the country is considered middle-class and below. I wake up every morning wondering how I'm going to provide for my family, wondering how I am going to make sure that my bills get paid. In fact, in order for me to run my campaign, I campaign all through the day, and then at night I work through the night into the wee hours of the morning just to make sure. Why? Because I love my country, and I want to give people a true option come 2016.
Absolutely. How do you plan to deal with the out-of-control economy?
Well, here's the thing. We are a consumption-based nation right now. We used to be a production-based nation. We've got to get back to producing. All we're doing now is consuming and buying. And if all you do is consume, 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 and buy, 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 you're going to go broke, and you're going to go bankrupt, and that's where we are right now. Let's call it what it is. We are bankrupt. We are almost $17 trillion in debt right now. So what we've got to do is we've got to get people back to working and back to making things in this country. How can we do that? Well, as President of the United States, I will be pushing to repeal NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We've lost 4.5 million jobs in the last 15 years just by NAFTA alone. We need to bring these manufacturing jobs, and as president, that's what I'm going to do. We also need to become energy independent. That's going to create another 2.5 million jobs. Experts will tell you that. that's not just a matter of economics, it's also a matter of national defense. Because if you look at some of the past conflicts, such as Desert Storm, 9/11, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, even Libya and everything else, it really all boils down to us making sure that we get oil here in America. Well, we've got the resources here to be able to be energy independent. So that's something I'm going to be pushing for, too. But we've got to get people back to work. I can promise you this, Lisa. When I go to Washington, I will not be concerned with playing politics to keep my job like the status quo politician does. I will be concerned with doing my job and making sure that Americans have jobs.
Well,
let me ask you a question. Oops, sorry.
Go ahead, Cindy.
I was going to ask Mr. Wells, do you think that there is also a need in perhaps dealing with some of the ABC alphabet soup different agencies that we have that are unconstitutional that take care of this by getting rid of them? But I think in trying to bring jobs back to America, you're going to have to deal with the ridiculous regulations that companies are now suffering from and the tremendous burdens that they're under with all of these government agency regulations that they're having to deal with every day and what it costs them.
You are so right. And once again, let me just say, we did not get in this mess overnight. And when I become president, it's not going to get fixed overnight. We've got to go to work. I will be a working president. I will promise you that. On my first week in office, I will definitely be going to work on all these executive orders that are unconstitutional and going ahead and starting by repealing those.
That was my next question. I'll send you a box of pens.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Well, on my very first day in office, and I'm going to talk about something that not many people are talking about, but on my first day in office, if our current administration does not do what they are supposed to be doing right now to bring Bo Bergdahl home, who is our only active live POW that is being held by Taliban forces in Afghanistan, our current administration knows where he is, but they are not doing what they have to do to bring this young man home. I have vowed to Bo, his parents, to the military, to the veterans, and to the people of the United States, if our current administration will not do what they are supposed to do to bring this young man home on my first day in office, the day that I'm inaugurated, I will be taking steps to bring this young man home. We have a soldier's creed, and in that creed it says that we will not leave a soldier behind. Why he's over there, and he's been a POW since June 30th of 2009. That's right, almost 4 years.
We've heard nothing about that.
Let me just tell you, I'm going to be in your area on the 28th of this month, which is a Friday. Friday, June the 28th, I will be in the Kansas City, Missouri area. And I will be at a Bring Bo Bergdahl Home rally. And I will be speaking about Bo Bergdahl. See, all the people that are listening, please come to this rally. It's going to be, you can go online, and his name is spelled B-O-W-E, last name Bergdahl, B-E-R-G-D-A-H-L. He is a sergeant in the Army, and it is a true tragedy that this young man is rotting in some cell over there and being tortured by Taliban forces.
If you'll ask Danny to send me that information, I'll put that information up on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition calendar page for people to be able to gain access to that event.
So
I want to piggyback on that because it's another issue. Our military has been completely dismantled. President Obama, he doesn't like the military, and we are not a nation of strength anymore. And people are, I mean, we're about to be taken over. People do not respect us. You know, what are you going to do to change the vision of America in the eyes of the world and to bring back our military?
Well, the first thing we got to do is elect.
Because that takes money.
I completely agree. Well, the first thing we got to do is we've got to elect a president that has a military background. Now, I served in the Army National Guard briefly, but I was there. I understand what is going on. Let me say this to you. You want to deter war? you deter war by having a strong economy and a strong military. As President of the United States, I will be pushing to make sure that our Army and our Navy, Air Force, Marines, every branch, Coast Guard, that every branch is taken care of and gets what they need in order to stay as strong as possible. At the same time, we've got to have true reform with the VA, and I will be pushing for an overhaul of the VA. We've got almost 1 million veterans right now that are waiting to hear from the VA, and they've been waiting for several years to get their claims to go through the VA, and it's just not happening. So we've got to have a true overhaul of the VA, and that's what I will be pushing for.
Awesome. Okay, well, folks, if you want to know anything more about Robbie Wells, you can go to RobbieWells2016.com, and he's got a great webpage there with all kinds of information about his background and his plan for attack on bringing back American values to the United States. And you can also talk to Robbie Wells every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. He hosts a town hall conference call. And get a pencil. I'm going to give you that number. It's 530-881-1300, and the conference code is 119387. Again, that phone number is 530-881-1300, and the conference code is 119387. Mr. Wells, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I hope you will come back often and give us an update on how your campaign is going.
Well, I will most definitely do that. And again, to you and all your listeners, I'm going to be in the Kansas City area on June the 28th, which is a Friday. I'm speaking around noontime, so if you guys can get over, y'all come on over. I'd love to be able to shake as many hands with people across this country that are looking for a true restoration of this nation. May God bless you, Lisa, and your listeners, and may God bless these United States.
Thank you. Good luck to you, Mr. Wells. And go to that website, RobbieWells2016.com, and hit the contribute button. Every good candidate needs a few dollars to help them along with their campaign. Thank you, Mr. Wells. Come back soon.
Good night.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Welcome back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm here with Cindy McGee from Show Me Patriots and Patrick Warner of Americans for Prosperity. Patrick has been running all over the state over the last year or so, dogging legislators in Jefferson City, trying to get them interested in all of the freedom-loving and liberty-minded issues that the patriots and the citizens are interested in. And he has put together a scorecard of just exactly how well did the legislature do this year. Thanks for being with us, Patrick.
Lisa, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being on with you and talking to your listeners and stuff, so thanks for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you, and we really appreciate the hard work that you guys do there at AFP and keeping track of those legislators, those squirrely dogs down there in Jefferson City who don't seem to want to pass right to work. So what's the deal here, Patrick? We've got this legislative scorecard here, and it's not good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, just to sort of give your listeners maybe a context of where we are today in June and how we got here, obviously the Missouri legislature kicked off its session in January. They started with a flurry of activity. We presented them with our 2013 legislative agenda on the very first day. And I don't remember if you were there or not, but I know that on that very first day of session, there was about 150 folks that met with Speaker Jones in his office to sort of kick the session off. We delivered our legislative agenda to all of the offices that day, and then we sort of watched and waited. And we sort of met with representatives and met with senators and talked to them about this agenda that we had, this pro-growth, smaller government, lower taxes, you know, any of the policies that promote our economic freedoms. And we sort of watched things unfold. And you and I have met, and I've been on your show a couple times now, and we started to get a little worried. We started to get a little disheartened early on, since we had super majorities in the House and the Senate, about the direction that they were going. And so about halfway through, we decided that, all right, look, you know, we need to take the time. We have over 50,000 members across Missouri that care about moving this state and this country forward passionately, just like your previous, you know, caller believes. And we decided maybe we should take the time and record them, score them, take the issues and the bills that they're talking about that impact our legislative agenda and create a scorecard. That's what we've done. And so for any of your listeners who are actually online and have the ability, you can go to www.moafp.org. On that site, we have the legislative scorecard A, B, C, D, and F. And it's interestingly, so we have a good number of what we title defenders of prosperity, but we have a lot of legislators that are in the DNF category. And so I would hope that many of your listeners, or at least recommend to some of your listeners, to go and see how their representative and their senator scored, at least on our report card. And keep in mind that our report card is a smaller government, lower taxes, policies that reduce regulatory, you know, burdens and promote economic freedom. So that's where we're coming from.
Right. And, it's, you know, it's not that hard. I never did understand. You know, people will tell me the politics of it. Well, the problem is that people are playing politics with our freedoms, and they got to stop playing politics and just start, you know, going by the rule book. You know, they have constitutions that they can read and follow. It shouldn't be that hard for them to follow the rules. You know, we all have to live by the rules, and it's just amazing to me that, I mean, you do. It's just, you've got everybody listed here, and there's a huge, huge number. Very few representatives at the top of the class, and a huge, huge number that fall below.
Yeah, it is sort of encouraging on one hand, but discouraging on the other hand. I mean, you know, these defenders of prosperity, and I don't know if I can name them all here, but I mean, there's a couple of them that truly stand out. Let me name one in particular.
Sure.
Representative Eric Burlinson out of Springfield, 100%. I mean, and there's others with him. But Representative Ehrlich Burnson is a soft-spoken, he really gets into the issues, he listens to his constituents, and one of the bills, and we've talked about this before, was a cap spending constitutional amendment. This was a bill that said, hey, future representatives and future senators in the Missouri General Assembly, what we would like to do is, before you go on a future spending spree, we would like to put in place a constitutional amendment that says we'd like to restrict some of your future spending. And we're going to tie that to a growth in our economy. We're going to tie that to population increases, et cetera. But we don't want you to go on future spending sprees that got us into this problem in the first place. And this sounds like a no-brainer, right? We have super majorities in the House, super majorities in the Senate, and it did not make it, to the Senate side until the last 3 days, and we showed up on the last day of session on the Senate side in an unprecedented committee hearing where we were forcing this issue. I can't tell you how proud I Am of our members who called in and emailed, and some of them drove to Jefferson City and visited their representatives and said, this is a priority. This is important to us. We do not need more state growth before we, you know, we need to rein in the spending, right? And so on the last day, that vote failed in the committee hearing by one vote. And if you scroll down the list, I don't know if your listeners are actually seeing this, but if you scroll down the list, a Republican state senator got a D, David Pierce, got a 67%. He was the one vote that stopped that bill from moving forward and becoming part of moving the state's agenda forward, you know, for the taxpayer. And we couldn't be more disappointed with him specifically, but the overall agenda was really impacted that day.
Yeah, well, David Pierce also stopped the Common Core bill as well, so he's good at stopping bills.
Yeah, that's why he got a 67. We also scored Common Core, which is probably why he's in a D. I was surprised he's in the D. I'm surprised he didn't make it the F category, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you score these, do you score these on votes or do you score these on bills sponsored? How do you score?
Yeah, this is the first time that we've actually done this report card. We've tracked legislation in the past, but this is the first time, and I sort of alluded to this in my sort of opening comments, that we were really getting frustrated with the direction this legislature was going. So we decided that we would score some particular bills. And what we did was is that we took a look at about 6, 7, 8 bills at that time and told all Republicans, I mean all representatives and all senators that we would be looking at these bills and we'll be scoring these bills and how you vote, whether it's at the committee level or the full House and Senate level. And then a couple more bills came online. So ultimately, I think we had about 10 or 11 bills that we scored at the end of the day. But we told them before this happened that this is something that we would be looking at and this is something we would be taking into effect. And when session was over, we would give them a grade based on these economic principles or these policies that we believe can move Missouri forward.
So do you intend to contact these guys and deal with them, you know, I mean, let's put their feet to the fire and give them some accountability.
We do, Lisa. This is exciting. I wish you were with us today. We spent about 5 hours today specifically sending individual press releases to these legislators' districts, to the newspapers, the dailies, the weeklies, the radio stations in their districts to say, hey, you have a defender of prosperity elected official in your area, and we think that you should thank them and recognize them and let the constituents know. And we also let folks know that guess what? You have a person in your district that receives an F, that doesn't really care about the taxpayer, who doesn't really care about moving Missouri forward, and we let them know as well. So we spent all day long today. It was all four of us in St. Charles County sending out these releases in every district across the state. So we hope this has an impact, and we are in the process of setting up one-on-one meetings with all of these folks to, A, look back, talk about our agenda in 13, but to also look forward and say, where are we going to go in 14?
Absolutely. Excellent work. You guys have really, really worked hard. You've been all over the state, all session long, trying to get the information out. So looking ahead, have you got a plan of action, looking ahead for the next session? What are we going to hit hard?
That's awesome. And before I answer that, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that none of this is possible without your listeners, without our members, without people picking up the phone. I've said this before. It does not take a whole lot of time to pick up the phone and call your state rep and call your state senator and call the governor and tell them one way or the other, no matter whatever, wherever you fall down on the issue, pick them up and call. I've spent 15 years on the receiving end of those phone calls. They make a difference. People tally them up, and your elected officials take note. So none of this was even possible without the folks, without our members and folks taking action. But looking forward, one of the things that really strikes me, there's a number of sort of indicators about where we are and how we're going to move forward, and I don't know if any of your listeners have seen the Rich State, Poor State report. It's a 6th annual one, and they talk about how we scored the last 10 years. We've been ranked 42nd in our economic performance. They look at the future outlook where we're ranked 23rd on our policies and tax rates. moving forward based upon the states around us. But this, Lisa, this is the number that struck me the most. Here's why. People vote with their feet, right? We are ranked 24th in terms of domestic migration, in terms of people coming or leaving this state. But here's the trend. Here's what really struck me. When you look at the last 10 years, the last 4 years, we've lost population.
Really?
Yes. In the last, this year, 2011, which, you know, they're always a little year behind in terms of the census reporting, we lost almost 13,000 people in 1 year. And so what we did this bold ideas tour, right? We toured the state, you referenced it. We've been all over the state because we look at Kansas, we look north of us, Iowa, we look at Indiana, we look at states all around us that are doing really creative, innovative things. And I've caught myself before. I said, look, we're sort of giving the representatives and the Republican senators grief, but it truly does take executive leadership, and this governor has been a no-show when it comes to moving this state forward, and it is infuriating. If I were governor and I looked around and I looked at what the governors around the state of Missouri, not around the country, I'm just talking about the governors that are touching the state of Missouri are doing.
You mean all those right-to-work states?
Yeah, I would be embarrassed. This is ridiculous. And for, you know, the one item that he did all year long was promoting the Obama-Reed-Pelosi definition of Medicaid expansion is not going to grow the state, and it's infuriating.
Nope. Yeah, and right to work sure would have helped things along, maybe, you know, to stop that exodus out of the state, bring some more jobs.
That's right.
Yeah, not looking too promising, good old Governor Nixon. Yeah, but, you know, you can't – even with the governor – we still have a veto-proof majority. We shouldn't be relying on the governor for everything. You know, we should have it should be a no-brainer. Obviously, it's not because there are a lot of Republicans on this F list that I'm reading right now.
There's a couple Republicans in this F list, and there's quite a few Republicans on the D list, and we're going to meet with them, and we're going to talk to them, and we're going to share with them what we believe are the items or the principles that can move this state forward, and we hope that we have an open ear as we move forward.
Yeah, because absolutely, what takes care of business is folks getting involved. You're absolutely right, Patrick, and they do listen to those phone calls and emails that come in. That does make
a
difference. Okay, so folks, if you want to get involved with Americans for Prosperity, go to americansforprosperity.org/Missouri or AFPMO.
AFP.org has the scorecard and everything else you need.
Okay, awesome. Patrick Warner from Americans for Prosperity, thank you so much for dropping in and giving us the update on this. And folks, get on that website and get involved with AFP. They're working for you.
Thanks, Lisa. It's always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Patrick. We'll be back, and thank you. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll be back after this break, and we're going to talk Agenda 21, White River Watershed National Blueway.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Create a new world order, because the global order is changing again, and the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us, from Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines. Our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
Hello, I'm back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're gonna dive right back into this White River fiasco that's going on here in Missouri and Arkansas. Last week we had Ike Skelton on with us, and he's trying to get together a coalition of folks to deal with their folks in the counties in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas to help fight this egregious land grab. And earlier this week, I had an opportunity to talk to a very nice gentleman from that area, the southern Missouri area. His name is Jim Fisher, and he's a Missouri resident, his family's been in Missouri since before Missouri was a state. And they had a huge amount of property here. They were farmers. They were independent, freedom-loving, land-working folks here. And the government came in and took almost all of their land. And to make, I can't remember which river it was that they dammed up the river to make, I think it was Bull Shoals Lake. Anyway, he's got an incredible story. I'm going to play that interview for you in a minute. I would also kind of want to tell you, there's, you know, this whole Agenda 21 thing is blowing up, and people are getting involved all over the place. And I lost the email. Oh, darn it. Okay, anyway, I've got some folks, we'll have some folks on next week to talk about. I'm so sorry that Justin sent me a great email with some great websites on it that I was going to give you, and I'll try to look for those during the interview to get those back to you so that we can get you involved and engaged. And oh, here we are, Justin Wood. I had it right here. Go to Facebook.com, the American Patriot Nation, and thepatriotnation.net for some more information on how another organization to get involved in these issues. But for right now, let's just go ahead and listen to this interview with Jim Fisher.
This is Lisa Payne-Nager, and you are listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And on the line with us today, we have Jim Fisher. Jim is a farmer from the southern part of the state. He's also a civil engineer consultant, and he has had a great deal of experience. His family history is just full of experience with the government taking liberties with the people's land, and as it relates to the White River Watershed Project, Jim can tell you firsthand on what this kind of government intervention and government intrusiveness does to Missouri families. Thanks for being with us today, Jim.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, Jim, you've told me just an incredible story, and I'm not exactly sure where to start, but let's give a little background here. You are from the southern part of the state of southern Missouri, and your family has been a landowner in that part of the state for over 100 years. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Our family homesteaded a place in Taney County in 1818.
And you had a very substantially large family farm at that point in time.
Well, by the time of World War II, they either owned or leased 4,000 acres.
That's substantial. So from that point on, your family was a farming family in the southern Missouri area. Generations farmed that land, lived off that land, made their living from farming on that land. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so tell me the story about how that morphed into your family losing that property.
Yes, Lisa. Whenever the U.S. Corps of Engineers began to construct the dam for Bull Shoals Lake and implement their Bull Shoals Project, as they called it, at that time, obviously they couldn't build the lake without our property. You know, we owned bottom ground. It was the prime farm ground in the area. The adjacent land, as you can imagine, if you've been to that area, is very rough. You know, outside of the bottoms, it's very steep and rocky hillsides. effectively barren other than the oak trees that and the pines that grow on it.
So, and then at that time, government deciding to build that lake pretty much just confiscated your property.
Pretty well, yeah. The intention of the lake is flood control, and it was a real sore subject for our family for a number of reasons, but that they were building this lake to protect, you know, farms in Arkansas from flooding by essentially stealing and flooding our farm permanently. And the real sad thing, and one of the many sad things in the story, is that, you know, the farms in Arkansas still flood. They're not very good at flood control, and it was devastating. Whenever the Corps of Engineers approached our family, they essentially said, well, this is the price that we'll give you. You can take us to court, but we're going to take your land no matter what. And we were to take them to court, we would have to pay legal fees, and that my family couldn't afford. How they determined the price was on comparables, but since no one, the bottom land wasn't, it was handed down from generation to generation, opposed to being sold. There was no good comparables. The Corps of Engineers used the comparables for the barren hill country adjacent to the bottom land, and essentially stole the farm from us for a price that was, you know, nowhere matched the income that my family had realized from it. This was so devastating to our family. My grandfather, and this was the project was finished in 1954. In May of 1955, he died of stress related illnesses at the age of 45. It was devastating. My father was 12 years old, and they had to live with family, and had to work. You know, his sister was 14, and he was 12. They had to work. The housewife who was raising them, she had to go to work. My grandmother.
So what this illustrates is that the government not only just recently, but has had a long history of coming in eminent domain situations, taking property from landowners, and your family had used that farm for generations to make their living, to farm on, and it was a substantial piece of property that they came when they just decided that they were going to flood it and make a lake out of it.
That's right. Besides farming, we also operated a ferry that was known as Blackwell Ferry, and the lake made the ferry impractical, so that also was taken from us.
And essentially, giving your family no visible means of support, taking all away their entire support. We were kind of talking a little earlier too, before we started our interview, about the Merrimack Lake situation. Can you kind of explain a little bit about how that took place?
Yes, I have an interest in these things, as you do as well. Merrimack Lake project is an interesting project because it was a Corps of Engineers flood control project on the Merrimack River back in the 70s, and they had started the project, and I'm not going to list any years for fail of being wrong, but they had started the project, and then when Grand Teton Dam failed, it turned the tide of opinion towards that type of dam. And there was a similar geological issue to that area that essentially made the project infeasible or unpopular, and they canceled it. Well, they had already acquired the land for the lake, you know, in similar methods, no doubt, to what they had done to our family, in the 50s. So the Corps of Engineers, they reappraised the land that they had took for Merrimack Lake. They gave the state the first shot at any piece they wanted for conservation or recreational purposes, which is where we have, or how we have, Merrimack State Park. And then the remaining land they offered back to the original landowners, but in some cases 10 times the original value.
So in the case where they're buying the land from the homeowners, they're taking it at a great discount, and then if they want to resell it back to them, they're escalating the price and offering them to buy it back.
That's how it's worked in practice. I guess you can make appraisal say whatever you want.
My gosh. Okay, so Jim, so you still own a portion of that property down there in southern Missouri on Bull Shoals Lake. Tell me how that property is divided up, and because some of your property accesses Bull Shoals Lake at this time, since most of the property they acquired was for flooding the lake. Tell me what happened to that property.
Well, my immediate family has 105 acres that remain at that site. The lake is the lake bounds the place on all sides due to the topography, or the Corps of Engineers land. You know what they call it. They have a take line, and this take line is this zigzag property line that they dreamed up. And other than being, you know, loosely based on north-south lines, there doesn't appear to be any rhyme or reason to it. In some places, on the north side of our property, there's a bluff, and it's 200 to 300 foot tall. And in some places, the line is 100 foot from the top of the bluff, where there's a 100 foot patch of land between our land and the lake that they let grow in the brush. And in some places, it's right up against the bluff. It's really haphazard. In some places, we own, and the water actually still floods. You know, the water from the lake actually, when the lake is high, will actually get onto our property. So I can't really speak to how they determine this take line. But on this, between our land and the land for the lake, I'm not allowed to cut any flowering tree of any size, and no trees greater than 2 inches. And what this does is it creates this brushy patch between me and the lake that, you know, that varmints can hang out in and criminals. We're on a dead-end road, and in the old bottom, when it's not flooded, it's grown to brush. It's very thick, and now, you know, meth users and teenagers go down there and party and stuff, where that used to be an operating farm.
My gosh, so let me get this straight. Okay, so your family has owned a huge, over 1,000 acres in that area since 1818. The government came in and confiscated it to build the Bull Shoals Lake Project. The remaining property that they allow you to maintain is surrounded by property that the Corps of Engineers owns, and they dictate how the use of that property, so you can't, they don't maintain it. They just dictate the ownership of that property, and it surrounds your property, and you have no control over what goes on in your area.
Yeah, that's loosely correct. We've owned. I don't know when the farm grew so large. In 1818 it was before it was a state. So, but besides those particulars, it's actually, as far as the current conditions, worse than that, because not only do they own this land that could be still yet farmed, they let it grow to brush, you know, and thistles and brush and whatever grows up in this. And not only do they not maintain it, they do not allow me to maintain it.
Okay. Well, let's talk about your capacity as a civil engineer. What kind of issues? You sent me an interesting letter that I read earlier today. You run into kind of issues with land and water development every single day, where people are having problems developing their land in that area. Can you give me a little bit of reference there?
Of course, Lisa. As you're likely familiar, we have the Clean Water Act now, and the Clean Water Act is the jurisdiction for the enforcement of such is placed jointly on the EPA and the U.S. Corps of Engineers, and is of any U.S. any water of the U.S. But how the EPA and the Corps of Engineers has, from what I can tell, arbitrarily decided to call it a water of the U.S. is any tributary that would have a significant nexus to a traditionally navigable water. Now, I don't know what significant nexus means, and no one else does either, but what that means in practice is that they make a determination, say in wetlands they use it's based on the vegetation, and it's pretty fuzzy science, but I mean I've heard of stories, you know. I mean, these are puddles, in many cases.
Go ahead. It could be a pond, a farming pond for anybody raising cattle? Or?
Absolutely. And in a man-made farm pond, if this aquatic vegetation, you know, establishes there, which makes sense that it would, that could become a wetland. And furthermore, ditches and creeks. You would think a water of the U.S. would have to have water in it at some point in time, you know, regularly. But how the Corps of Engineers determines their jurisdiction within a creek is if the water body maintains what they call an ordinary high water mark, which essentially means that it has an erosion surface, you know, like say like a ditch that doesn't hold grass. That's likely within their jurisdiction.
Because they have determined that because of that, the way the terrain is laid out, that there's probably water running through there at some point.
At some point in time, yes.
Okay, so basically what this boils down to put it very simply in the most simplest of terms, not only, I mean, the federal government is going to get you one way or another. They're going to get you through the Clean Water Act, or they're going to get you through this White River National Blue Way situation. All directions.
Well, yes, Lisa, but what's so irksome about this White River National Blue Way is that, from what I gather, and honestly, I need to read more on it, but I have read that there will be a 180-foot buffer zone between waters of the U.S. That will be in the jurisdiction of this National Blue Way. Now, there's so little information out there, nobody really knows what this means. But I can tell you from my experience with the Corps of Engineers, who is a party to this National Blue Way stuff, that essentially will take their jurisdiction from the high bank of these ditches that they now control. And the worst thing about it is it's not so much their control, but that they, every time you want to do something in there, it's a six-month process, an expensive six-month process just to tell them that you're doing it, you know, and 6 months is actually gracious to them. I mean, some of these drag out for years. And to little, you know, and usually to no different, the state is has a much more efficient system of environmental compliance, right or wrong, but at least they're more efficient with it. And the federal government is terribly inefficient, and by increasing this zone to 180 feet, it leaves immense, literally almost unlimited jurisdiction for these agencies in this watershed.
That's amazing. Well, Jim Fisher, I can't thank you enough for putting that all into a nice, easy-to-understand package. What a devastating story your family has. I'm so sorry to hear about what was a fabulous family, independent living family, and the way the government has over a long period of time. This is not a new thing. This is just amazing how this has been going on for so long, how far the government has been trying to reach into the lives of individuals and take their property.
It's
not new.
Lisa, we're sorry too, but we and because it's an absolute travesty, it's an affront to our Constitution, but we are hopeful that people other than us, you know, that aren't so greatly affected by it, concern and care, and thank you for taking your time to interview me.
Oh, well, I really appreciate it. I hope you'll come back and give us some updates and let us know how things are going. Thank you so much.
Will do, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Actually, before we do that, let's just talk. Let me give you some information about how you can get informed and engaged on some of these issues. Ike Skelton is, and I had the email address up here just really conveniently, and I have, oh, there it is. Ike Skelton is still taking names, folks, on how you can get engaged and become a community member in the separate counties down there in the southern part of Missouri. So if you want, hello. Go to mypoliticalmail.ike@gmail.com. Get a hold of Ike Skelton, and he will give you all the information that you need on how to get involved with this situation and help put a stop to it. Also, on the Agenda 21 issue, there is a protest tomorrow in Maryland Heights at 5:30. at the Maryland Heights Center on 2344 McKelvey Road in Maryland Heights. Another land grab issue, a protest to protect property rights in Maryland Heights. The Great Streets Initiative sounds like another great plan from the Agenda 21 folks. So you can get involved in that. I want to thank Jim Fisher very much for taking the time with me today and sending me the audio. As you might have noticed, it's not the usual audio. My audio didn't work, but he taped the interview, and we were able to save the day from his audio. So thank you for sending me the audio today, Jim Fisher. And we will now take a break, and we'll come back with Tom Martz of the Lock & Smith Foundation, and we will talk Yankee Doodle legislation.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Here's some information compiled from College Politico. There's a lot of heated debate about guns and gun control right now, and that's why it's important to know the facts about guns. The U.S. has a lot of guns, yes, an estimated 270 million of civilian-owned firearms in America. That works out to about 89 guns for every person in America. In fact, the U.S. is number one in the world when it comes to gun ownership. However, the U.S. doesn't even crack the top 25 in gun murder rate. In life and death situations, civilians use guns to defend themselves more than 77% of the time. Civilian justifiable homicides by gun is 73.3%. For police, it's over 99% of the time. Americans use guns in self-defense more than you might think. 2.5 million estimated number of incidents of defensive gun use per year in the United States. A lot of newspaper ink has been used telling the dangers of rifles like the AR-15. But what do the statistics say? Well, all rifles, that includes the AR-15, were involved in fewer homicides in 2011 than blunt objects, fists, and knives. 1.5 as many homicides were committed with blunt objects and rifles. 2.2 times as many homicides were committed with fists than rifles. 5.2 as many homicides were committed with knives than rifles. Beyond that, rifles are used on a tiny percentage of all murders in the U.S. 2.6% of murders in 2011 involved rifles, including the AR-15s. Take these facts and use them next time you're explaining guns and gun control comes up. This has been the Old Patriot. Good day.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our us wives and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
And that's right, we're back, and we have more than a half an hour to talk to Tom Martz about Yankee Doodle legislation.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
What do you think of that, Tom?
I'm impressed. I have my own theme music.
You got your own lead-in. I have a sister who's in the music business, and I've been asking her to do that for me. Yeah, it's so cool. Thank you to all her my sister and her friends who wish to be unnamed. Actually, they don't, because they're musicians. They don't want to align with political sides, which is very brilliant, I think, on their part. But they took the time to help me with that little lead-in. So every time we have you on now, and every time we talk about Yankee Doodle legislation, I'm going to play it.
Wow, well, I am in awe.
I've been trying to get that done for a while. That's so funny. So thank you, my sister and her friends, and So we have Tom Martz with us from Locke & Smith Foundation. Tore you away from your meeting. You guys are hot and heavy, knee-deep into the dirty aspects of trying to find the most constitutional House of Representatives person and Senate person. Yes?
Yeah, we are finishing up the legislative review for session 2013. Of course, the legislature's already done and over with, and we got a lot of bills reviewed while they were in session, but there are some lingering issues because we look at everything that reaches the stage of third, read, and passed. And I know there are other groups who will pick out like 11 and 12 pieces of legislation, or they'll do certain issues, and that's how they'll grade their legislator on. But when we first started this, we thought, you know, we were only going to look at the bills that made it to the governor's desk and determine who was the most constitutional voting member of the Senate and the House based on those bills. And we got a fair amount of complaints of people saying, well, that's not enough bills to look at. So then the next year we decided to go with everything that made it to third, read, and passed. And the reason we went that direction instead of any other direction is because everything that makes it to that stage literally has the availability of having an impact on the people of Missouri. Because once it's third, read, and passed in either the House or the Senate, that means it's already passed one chamber. So all it has to do is get past the other chamber, and then it could end up on the governor's desk. There's no reason to look at any other legislation than what absolutely has the availability of becoming law.
Absolutely. And there's with 2,000 pieces of legislation moving through the House and the Senate every year or more, I think you look at plenty. I think you look at plenty of legislation.
We're looking on the average of close to 300 votes for the members of the House of Representatives, and we are probably looking at close to 200 votes in the Senate, except I think this year we're going to exceed 200 votes in the Senate because they just absolutely came out.
Yeah, they were on steroids.
They went nuts, and I think that was pretty much at the beginning of the session, that was kind of the directive of the leadership in the Senate was that we're going to start cramming stuff through. Basically, they're going to change the roles because the House is usually the one that starts cramming stuff through like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the Senate decided, well, there's a lot of stuff that we'd like to get done. And there was some really good pieces of legislation that just got hung up. And, of course, they play the blame game.
Well, they do. Absolutely, Common Core. I think it was on purpose. They didn't want it to pass, so they did that little dance at the end with it.
Well, we have a meeting tomorrow night here in Springfield about private property in the law or private. Man, I forget the name of our own meeting. Privacy in the law. That's what it is. We're going to have Carl Bearden's coming down to discuss the DOR issue.
Uh-huh.
And Mary Byrne will be coming in and discussing Common Core and all the privacy issues involving Common Core with the database, the tracking, and all of that information going back and forth.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, here we are complaining about all of the issues with Common Core over the last year, and it's nothing compared to what the federal government's doing now. NSA, thank you so much. They're probably,
I heard a radio host today interviewing an individual who's actually in Washington, D.C. as his full-time job, not as a politician, but as a journalist. And he made the comment, he was explaining this NSA deal. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
this just made me absolutely feel safe after he said this. Right? I guess I'm being sarcastic. He said that what happens is that companies like Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, Google, Facebook, they send this information to the government. That's my first problem. Number one, they're sending it there or they're being directed to send it there. I don't know which. But he said that it's put into this mythical lockbox.
Yeah. Like Social Security and Medicaid.
Yeah, and what happens is it sits in this mythical lockbox until the FISA court has heard a good enough case that they want to get in and research, let's say they want to research five numbers. And then if those five numbers lead to a different set of numbers, well, then they have to go back to the FISA court to get whatever information it is that they want to get out of all this stuff. But you know as well as I do, there is no mythical lockbox.
No. Well,
you've got Private Bradley in the military as a private who sends all this top secret info to Wikipedia. He's a private for Pete's sakes.
Right.
You have this gentleman by the name of Edward Snowden who.
Yeah, 29 years old.
NSA that long. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got his GED, no college. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's probably one of those computer genius guys, but 29 years old, and he's in control of all the government secrets. And now he's in China because that's a great place for you to be when you have somebody who's got all the government secrets.
Hey, nothing says you're a free country like seeking asylum in China. It used to be people came to America to seek asylum. And, of course, you've got people like John Boehner and Dianne Feinstein and all these people proclaiming he's a traitor. Well, he's not a traitor because a traitor is somebody who sells or submits this information to an enemy to our nation.
But he's in China.
Well,
he
supplies we the people with this information. So are we an enemy to the United States of America?
Well, that's the thing. Thank you for putting that out there. Okay, so we're gonna execute this Snowden if they ever get a hold of him, and I'm pretty sure they'll find him and he'll be gone. But you know they're gonna string him up for whistleblowing. There is a difference between whistleblowing and selling secrets to enemies. And then we've got President Barack Obama running guns to Turkey in Benghazi. Explain it to me. Or Mexico.
Yeah, but remember, in Turkey and Benghazi, we're doing it for all the right reasons. The president says so.
Oh, sure. Man,
I mean,
things are upside down.
It's kind of like that Fast and Furious program that they were running. They're absolutely... No government body should be able to ask or demand that any private enterprise or any government official break the law in order to find lawbreakers.
Right.
I mean, the fact that this happens all the time in our police agencies. Oh, we're going to let these people deal drugs, because eventually we're going to get to the kingpin. Well,
right.
How long do you allow these people to break the law for your own benefit so eventually that you might be able to get to this mythical kingpin character?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and it's been going on for so long now, we just accept it as the norm.
Yeah.
And we don't prosecute people, and we certainly don't put them in jail. If we had a few more, we need to clone Joe Arpaio and put him in every state so that we'll have, you know, decent law enforcement. But, yeah, I mean, I just went to the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Convention last week, and it was so refreshing to hear that and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of this next week too, but there's a contingent of people out there who are not interested in the status quo anymore. There are a lot of law enforcement officers out there who are done with being asked to enforce unconstitutional laws. So there you go, folks. Hopefully that this movement will grow, and I've got some things on the back burners for next week. Hopefully we'll bring some more attention to this. Okay, Tom, let's talk a little bit about some Yankee Doodle legislation. I could play the lead in again, but we had some good. I have one that I want to touch on. But do you have anything?
The one that we were going to discuss last week was what I call the anti-Sharia law, which in reality was not an anti-Sharia law to begin with, But
okay,
I'm afraid
people are
going to
be so angry with us because this is a classic piece of Yankee Doodle legislation, and it's submitted by Brian Nieves, who, in my opinion, is really good at writing this kind of stuff, because a lot of stuff that comes from him, I look at as Yankee Doodle legislation, especially it gets the folks all lathered up because it's a hot topic, it's serious, people are concerned about it, but I'm not really sure that there's any teeth in it. So why don't you take this, Tom?
Well, one of the things that really irritates me is, and I'm not going to single out Brian Nieves. He's one of several. And it's a symptom that they reach what I consider an iconic stature up in Jefferson City.
Yeah.
Where if any of them put their name on a piece of legislation that was, let's say it was a gun-grabbing bill,
mm-hmm.
and they put their name on it, and they promoted it as a means to provide safety for Missourians, the people on their Facebook page would be applauding them
mm-hmm.
without even reading what the bill does.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that you and I would agree that the Constitution is the law of the land.
Right.
So at what point does a state statute override the Missouri Constitution? And the answer should be never.
Right.
But I'm afraid, and this is where we get into trouble, is we will have judges who will apply something somewhere they read or something happened in Egypt, and they go, you know what, that's not a bad idea, let's bring that over here.
Okay, but here's the deal. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But in reality, what that piece of legislation did, and I hate to tell people this, but as a person who follows the Constitution, I agree with Jay Nixon's veto letter.
Yes.
This bill was specifically designed in a manner that it's going to create bottlenecks for
mm-hmm.
businesses that want to merge, businesses that want to do business overseas, businesses that want to do business here in Missouri, and it will have a huge impact on adoptions. Now, once that kid is over here, you know, then that child falls under American law. But when that kid that is being adopted is overseas, it doesn't matter what country, that child falls under foreign law.
Okay, let's talk another. Yes.
Go ahead.
Exactly. So let's talk about another aspect of this bill, and this is something that does not only relate to this bill, but it relates to so much of the legislation that comes out of Jefferson City and has for such a long time, and it's the judicial element of this bill. Okay? The House of Representatives, under Article 7, Sections 1 and 2, has the power to impeach the judiciary in Missouri. Okay? If
yes.
any member of the judiciary is not doing their job, is not supporting and defending the Constitution, and on and on and on, it is the job of the House of Representatives to impeach. So if we have a Constitution and we have state statutes already in line, we don't need this bill. If the judiciary is following the Constitution, we don't need this bill.
Yeah, those two sections of the Constitution, in reality, anytime a judge on the bench cites that they are going to rule on something by using something that they saw over in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
That should automatically start the alarm bells off.
That should be the beginning of an impeachment process.
Exactly. They should be impeaching. We have not impeached a judge in this state since the Civil War. Now, is that because that we've got perfect judges and all that? I'm thinking not so much. I'm thinking that the House of Representatives is not doing their job monitoring the judiciary. They are spending all of their time writing legislation, you know, and campaigning on it and getting the folks lathered up and not doing the other parts of their job. Well, I've been saying that for a long time.
I don't think you're I don't think we in our lifetime will ever see an actual impeachment. Because I think, in all sincerity, neither political party wants to be seen or promoted as going out on a witch hunt for somebody. All you've got to do is look back to Clinton.
Yeah.
And that was on the federal level.
I don't care. That's their job. That's how the Constitution was written. That's how the checks and balances are solid. And if you have legislators who don't have the backbone to do their jobs, then they need to go. And writing legislation is not the only job that they have. Their biggest part of the job is to keep checks and balances on the other branches, and monitoring the judiciary is just that. And that's my biggest gripe with bills like this. And
I disagree with you.
And most of the time when you see legislation written in Missouri, not on every bill, but a lot of these very crucial bills, they are written to kick it back because to the judiciary, because they know that somebody's going to file a lawsuit to challenge it, and that's where they'll get their case law established, whatever. Same thing with the Agenda 21 bill that went through, and I think Nieves was a sponsor of that. Really glad that we have some recognition for Agenda 21 issues, but basically that is a bill designed, and Missouri is not the only one following that format. They got that from Alabama, I think. But that is a bill designed to kick it to the courts. It's immediately going to go to the courts. And instead of writing good, solid legislation with teeth in it, or maybe going after some of these regulatory agencies and knocking out these regulatory agencies, they write legislation to kick it back to the courts. That's wrong. That's Yankee Doodle.
Well, true. And the judge is always going to go with precedent. If something similar was ruled on back in 1921, or you name the year, a judge is always going to go back to, well, you know, I've read the court case such and such in 19 whatever. I read this case and such and such. And this falls under the same auspices. I'm not going to change the direction these laws are heading, so this is what's going to occur. I mean, I literally don't see any hope for a hardcore nullification movement on any level in government.
Yeah, I'm sorry to see that too. But, you know, folks, and I'm probably going to get hate mail on this. I've never received hate mail yet, but I'm probably going to get some on this, because this bill, 267, that went through the House and the Senate this passed, it's sitting on the governor's desk and he vetoed it, it's very serious. I mean, we need as a country to monitor our own legislation, and we need to watch our own bills, and we need to follow our own laws. We don't need to be going outside the United States to have a one world order laws. You know, we already have enough problems with the UN as it is. But the problem, you know, if we don't learn to recognize this kind of legislation, stop blindly following these things as they go through, because they are on popular topics that are, you know, make people hot under the collar. We need to look for the teeth in the legislation. And that means not kicking it back to the judiciary to solve for us. That means actually if a legislator is going to take the time to write a piece of legislation, we want it to have some teeth in it. You know, and if that takes more time and stops you from writing other legislation on other issues, that's fine. But we've got to stop writing 2,000 pieces plus of legislation a year, and we've got to stop going all over the state campaigning on all of these things. It's ridiculous.
Have you ever noticed that when government actually writes a piece of legislation for government, that there's no what do I want to say? You know how, like, if somebody commits the offense of X, it's like a Class B felony, or it's a Class C misdemeanor.
Yeah.
It's this, that,
slap
and the other.
Wrist.
Yeah, when you start going through all the areas where government has written a piece of legislation that constricts government to do something, you know, all they're allowed to do is X, there's never a penalty phase where what happens if somebody exceeds X?
Right.
This is pretty much where we're at with the DOR.
Let's talk about that.
Everybody down along the line who shared that info against a state law, not to mention the Fourth Amendment. Of course, the Fourth Amendment doesn't exist anymore, but those people should be up on charges. I don't care if they're a government employee.
Absolutely. And they should be in a position that the kid in China is right now. They should be able to blow the whistle on these bad acts that are going on in these government agencies. They should not have to be able to enforce those or act on them.
Where's the trigger in these laws that goes off when this happens that then automatically starts a penalty process and something to punish these people for what they've done?
There is none.
We have a statute, we have a law against it, but where's the trigger in that law that makes them, that goes off, that will then start the process to hold these people to account, punish them for what they've done, and put a stop to what they're doing? And that's what I see missing here. I don't see anybody really doing anything about this. They're still doing it.
I don't think the trigger is there for any governmental entity. It's always for us, the commoners.
Right.
There are plenty of triggers for
us. So we're left to our only option now is for the citizens to file a lawsuit against the DOR.
Pretty much. Because you're not going to get the Attorney General to do anything about it. That's his job. And that's another thing, too. You know, can you impeach an Attorney General? He's not doing his job.
You know, that's the hard question, because the Attorney General, I mean, he is, for a lack of a better term, he is the top cop or the top legal law enforcement individual in the state of Missouri. So if he's not going to act when there clearly is a law that has been broken, then the whole system's broken.
Right. And nobody is suffering except the people. People are getting their driver's licenses renewed every day all across the state with this illegal equipment that's been installed on government money that the Department of Revenue has taken in to install all of this equipment. And their data is being collected, and nobody's stopping it. And there's a bill sitting on the governor's desk. Do we know the status of that bill? Has he vetoed it yet, or is it just still sitting there?
It's still sitting there. For the time being, I really look for that to either get vetoed the very last day he's capable of vetoing it, or he's going to allow it to become law without his signature.
Right. Do we know what the drop dead date on that is, by any chance?
Sometime in July. I want to say it's the 15th.
Okay.
Something of that nature.
So theoretically, if that bill becomes law by the 15th of July, are the trucks going to be backing up to all the DOR offices across the state and taking that equipment out, or are they just going to leave it all in there?
No, they're just going to leave it all in there. Don't just tell them that, oh, okay, well, don't use this, or, well, but don't get caught using it, but
so,
go ahead
but,
and keep what you got.
Yeah, we're not going to be scanning birth certificates, but we're still going to be taking pictures with biometric data on them.
And in reality, government's primary function, according to the Fourth Amendment, is to make sure that you, as an individual, are secure in your person,
right,
your papers, documents, and everything. They're not supposed to be keeping a collective database on everything that you do.
So, but they'll still be taking your pictures, and you will not be secure in your person.
I mean, all you got to do is look at the last Supreme Court case where they allow the taking of DNA,
right,
once you've been arrested. Now, I was naive to how the court system works, but one of the ladies in our legislative committee actually works for the court, and she said that once you're arrested, you actually have to, let's say you're found not guilty, or there was not enough evidence to bring it to trial, therefore the case is thrown out. Do you know that you have to request from the court that record be expunged?
Really?
Other than that, it just stays there for eternity.
So you have an arrest record then, effectively.
Yeah.
Even though nothing came of it.
Which I kind of would be under the lines of thinking that, you know, if you're found not guilty or the case has been dropped, they should just hand you a big packet in a manila folder and say, this is everything that we got on you. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
It is yours for your safekeeping.
Feel free to burn it. Right.
And now we've got police departments down in Alabama paying people at a checkpoint stop for a DNA swab or a blood test to determine how many people are actually driving with a trace amount of alcohol or pharmaceutical drugs in their blood system if they chose to comply with it.
Oh, they've been doing that in St. Charles County for a long time. They're taking blood samples at DWI checkpoints. They have judges on site at these checkpoints swearing out warrants. They've been doing that for a long time here in this county.
And where do you live?
St. Charles County.
Oh, man, remind me never to visit.
Yeah, don't go to the wineries here in St. Charles County because, I mean, that's what they do is they set up these checkpoints at these winery areas and they have a judge on site at the checkpoint and they swear out a warrant. You know, if they pull you over and suspect that you've been drinking, the judge will swear out a warrant and they'll take your blood.
Wow. See, I was arrested in Texas because I got pulled over for speeding. And the cop was writing a citation. And he made the comment, Mr. Marsh, do you mind if I search your vehicle? To me, that was a question. It was not a statement. So I said,
do you mind. And they arrested you?
What?
They have the right to do that in Texas?
Well, I got arrested because I denied him the availability to search my vehicle. So after he arrested me, then he has the authority to search my vehicle. He impounded my vehicle, and at the time I was driving trucks, so I had a load of broccoli on that had to be in Brooklyn, New York on Monday. This was Saturday, and all totaled it cost me close to $1,000 simply because I said, yes, I do mind if you search my vehicle. But the ticket, the impound fee, The towing company, which I thought was rather curious, because the towing truck company and the impound yard was on the same lot as the police department.
It's a racket.
So literally, when I got out of the Justice of the Peace's chambers after pleading no contest, or I would have been thrown in jail until Monday, I walked right across the parking lot to where my truck was sitting, in the impound yard, where the towing company was also at and located.
So did you get it expunged from your record?
Well, no, because I pled no contest to that one. In reality, I pled guilty. I pled guilty to something, but I guess I also pled guilty to denying the police officer the availability of searching my vehicle when he clearly asked me, do you mind if I search your vehicle?
So they have, in Texas, they have the right to search your vehicle. I mean, obviously they have to ask you the question, but if you deny, they have the right to arrest you because you deny them access?
Well, I don't know if they have the right, but they sure do it. I mean, I watched a YouTube video the other night that somebody sent me off of a sheriff's or Texas Highway Patrol's dash cam where he pulled these two women over because one of them threw a cigarette butt out the window.
Oh.
And then he called in a female police officer to do a cavity search on these two women.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is all on the dash cam. And his essence for calling in the cavity search was that he smelled something funny in the vehicle that could have been possibly an illicit drug, and he wanted to make sure that they weren't carrying.
Really?
So they literally, I mean, they front, back, forward, it looked like the TSA.
My goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, that's bad news.
And people just tolerate it.
Well, I mean, what choice do you have?
I think we're to the point that they're going to do that anywhere. I don't think it's a matter of being legal to do it in Texas, like Tom said, Lisa. I think we're seeing that all across the country now, where these it's outrageous what they're doing and what they're getting away with. And Tom's right; people just tolerate it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of the question: what choice do you have? What are you going to do? You don't have the ability to fight back. What
well,
are you
read
do?
The constitutional sheriff's thing. Did Sheriff Mack share his story with how one day he just up and woke up to what he was being asked to do was not within the constitutional confines of a police department?
Yeah. I mean that's how he just kind of got that's where he went off on. And how
well,
he started
you've got the story
campaign.
Of the sheriff down in Florida just in the last week that was arrested by the governor for doing basically what Sheriff Mack did and actually exercising that in the case of someone who was arrested, and it was wrong, and he expunged it. He deleted the record of the arrest, and the governor came in and arrested him for it.
And according to the Attorney General, everything that the sheriff did was done under the auspices of the law.
Well, I don't know, folks. We're gonna have to start standing up, start looking out for all of these issues, and start standing up to them. We're gonna have some people on hopefully next week to help us along with that idea about standing up for your rights and not buckling under to this unconstitutional behavior coming from our government. And you gotta watch your legislature, folks. You gotta watch them with this legislation. You cannot fall prey to this hero worship that we seem to have with our idols in Jefferson City. You know, when they're writing legislation like this, you just can't buy it. You gotta be able to read it and discern whether or not it's good legislation or it's just campaign material. Tom Martz, we thank you so much for joining us this evening. I hope you enjoyed your lead-in, and we'll have you back again soon. Every time that you come, we'll play your Yankee Doodle lead-in, and we'll keep an eye on all of this legislation.
Hey, I'm stoked. I've got my own theme music. I mean, who else could say that?
Absolutely.
Pretty cool.
Are you going to be able to give us some sneak peeks about what's coming out of the Locke and Smith Foundation and let us know, maybe give us some inside info about how things are going in your tallies?
We are almost finished up with the House. We've got a huge chunk of the Senate done. I think what we're going to find this year is probably we're batting around a 42-43% House bills confined to the Constitution. Of course, some of the bills some of the bills that we look at are absolutely 100%. The bill should have never been written to begin with. But we're only looking at the changes that are being made to existing law. We looked at one this evening that I can't remember the bill number, but the bill itself was absolutely horrible. How this thing ever got passed into law is beyond me, because it definitely violates the individual's rights to do a lot of things.
Okay.
But the changes they were making to the bill really had no impact on whether the bill changed or not.
Okay,
so
we're going to have to wrap it up.
That is the change.
All right. Thank you, Tom Martz. We're going to have to wrap it up. We're almost out of time. Happy birthday, Caroline Miller. Thank you, Cindy McGee. Thanks to all my guests this evening. And we'll see you next week right here, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page,
and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Caroline, are you there?